Hello everybody, this is Grace Sandra from buildaselfie.com and welcome to my first ever podcast. So I'm excited. I'm just going to start podcasting and I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time worried about production and editing and the like, because I knew if I did that I would not keep going. So I would like to do something a little bit every other day, every 3 days, maybe at some point I can settle on a schedule. But I knew, just like with YouTube, if I made it too big of a to-do, I would never get around to it. So this is something I've been wanting to do as I launched the Build a Selfie platform, which is about Black women learning to really, on a very practical, tangible level, take control of all things that have to do with loving ourselves, with caring for ourselves, and with developing ourselves. I have a real huge interest in self-development, self-leadership, self-help. I love personality tests. I love the Enneagram. I love all of that stuff. I'm kind of a big self-development nerd. I love those kind of books by Tim Ferriss and other people like that. So I definitely wanted to jump into that genre. But there's a bigger reason. It's not just something that I'm interested in or some books that I've liked to read. It's in part because I realize if I didn't start doing more of this, probably about a couple years ago, I was probably not going to survive my life and survive myself and survive the choices and the circumstances that have happened to me in the last 5 or 6 years. So I come by this journey extremely honestly because I started really intensely dedicating my life. Shouldn't say that. That's a little bit of an overstatement. I started intensely dedicating myself to some self-care practices in the name of survival, and realize like this is really helping me, like wow, this is actually changing things for me. I'll give you an example. I used to, in probably I would say, let's say about a decade ago, I had a very hard time with speaking very negatively to myself. And when I say a hard time, I don't mean like every now and then I would be like, oh, you're so dumb, you made a dumb mistake. I mean, I would be like, you are such a stupid effing idiot. You are the worst person that's ever lived. You're a horrible mother. You're a horrible wife. Why do you think you deserve to exist? I mean, statements like that, that I personally would never say to anyone else ever. I was very extremely verbally abusive to myself, essentially. And those kind of statements degraded me, as you can imagine, as you can surmise, degraded me, brought me down. It became part of my identity. Like I literally, you know, spoke those words into myself and became what I thought. Your thoughts become things. I truly believe that when it comes to how we speak about ourselves. And that was a real big wake-up call for me. Once I realized the power that I was, once I realized that the ways that I was doing that was very destructive and very detrimental. So now, for example, I guard myself very closely about what I'm thinking about, in terms of, especially if it's thoughts about me, if I find myself saying you're dumb or why would you do that? There's actually a series of strategies that I employ to stop myself. I have in the past taken part of dialectical behavior training. It's called DBT. I've done this with a trained professional counselor. But some of the strategies that I've learned from that are to practice something called radical acceptance. Essentially, it's a way to have self-compassion on yourself when you make a mistake. So that's just one example. Okay, so that's like, think of one out of maybe 50 or 60 things that I was really doing that was harming myself, including addictions, money, sex, food. I mean, just a whole host of things. So what I wanted to do for this first episode was just share a little bit of my story. I mean, a very, very general overview of my story and how I got to where I am now, where I'm intensely interested in really not just surviving. I'm very, very interested in thriving. And I can tell you honestly, right now I'm not thriving. Not thriving the way I should be or I could be. That doesn't mean I'm not happy or I'm not content or I'm not at peace. But it means that I could be in a better place. There's things about my life that don't have to be the way they are. And I know that they're a direct result of my own mistakes or my own mismanagement. You know, so for example, here's just another example. Right now, the heat in my car is broken. Now, that might not be such a big deal if I didn't live in Michigan. And I have to wait until, you know, we have enough budgeted money in our and our car repair account to get this fixed. But in the meantime, it's kind of a pain to drive around and be cold with no heat, right? So that's just an example of money mismanagement, because we should have more money in our savings. That's one small example. To give myself some grace, my husband did just the other day, so unfortunate, two deer like came out in front of his car, and when he was on the way to work, and he clipped one of them. He was able to thankfully not hit them like head on and create horrible damage to the car, but one of them he clipped and created a lot of damage to our car. So we have expenses going in some other directions, but still, you can probably think of some example in your life where you know from the very bottom of your heart you could blame other people, or you could blame life, or blame circumstances, or blame the universe, or whatever you want to call it. But you know good and doggone well that things could be different. And I think that's what I've really come to grips with. And that's a little bit about what radical acceptance is, and why that perspective has helped me so much to not take a radical acceptance has helped me so much to learn to love and care for myself and have compassion for myself, even when I make mistakes. So I don't have a lot of shame or sorrow or anger about the fact that I don't have heat in my car right now. I'm like, okay, you made some mistakes. You didn't save where you should have. You guys maybe overspent in these areas. Now it's time to get back on track. So that has been helpful. With that, I'll start with just my story. Again, this is just a general overview, and hopefully this will lend some insight to the themes that I'm going to be discussing in this podcast, which I put in the bio section of the Anchor podcast, which is that I've been through early childhood life trauma, severe depression, postpartum depression, a very difficult marriage, ministry, loss of ministry, affairs, divorce, losing all my money, losing my retirement, losing a couple jobs in a row, getting remarried, suffering abuse, losing two babies, having a late in life baby, more depression, PTSD from abuse, and learning to find my voice and become a writer and entrepreneur. So those are the themes. And when I say a general overview, I didn't actually mean to do that. That's the bullet points, but I'm going to give you a little bit more. I'm going to put some skin on all of that. But that's all that I've survived. And I take a healthy amount of responsibility for everything I've been through. And when I say a healthy amount, I mean 98-99% of it. And there's a lot of things I couldn't control that were outside of my control. For example, my father's abuse, my brother's abuse, my husband's abuse, any of the things that I've been through like that, I've relinquished that I was in control. But all of the mistakes that I've made, I take responsibility for, and that has been so wonderful for me. And it's nothing to be afraid of. And I think in a lot of my early 20s and maybe even a lot of my early 30s, a lot of my 20s and my early 30s, I didn't understand how helpful it is to take responsibility and how much peace there is to take responsibility for your mistakes. So I hope that on this journey, you can be inspired, really. Just be inspired and know that no matter how low you get, you can still work on building yourself, and that there are very real and practical, very tangible strategies. So with that, I'll tell you my story. And I'm going to try, hopefully, not to have these be too long, but I'm not going to set a time limit because I don't want to be bound by that. I just want to get on here and start recording. Record something, upload, and hopefully I'll be able to make this a regular practice. So the gist is, I grew up in with quite a bit of trauma, as I mentioned, from my father. My father was sexually abusive to me for about 8 years. He went to prison when I was 11. I did testify against him in court with both my mom and my father present. My dad's lawyer tried to blame me, and that was very, very impactful. And that stuck with me for many years. Actually, that was a huge part of the damage caused, was my dad's lawyer making it seem like I was asking for it, or that I was a very sexually promiscuous child, which isn't that just really the evilest shit you've ever heard? So that's on the one side of things. My mother, she all of my life has been a paranoid schizophrenic, and there's times where it's been up and there's times where it's been down, where it's been okay and manageable, and then there's a lot of times where it's just been very out of control. And from what I can remember from growing up, she was a little bit removed, and there was, I think, some abandonment issues that were caused for me and probably my siblings as well, although they're a little bit older. I know we all have issues, actually. I shouldn't even say that. We all have issues, but there's a way that when a mother has very severe mental issues, it's going to impact her kids in ways that you can't even really articulate. In some ways, I'm still kind of learning what that has meant for me. But she wasn't able to protect me the way she should have, or problem solve the way she should have. So, for example, I think there's probably a lot of points in our life where we were poor enough to be able to get food stamps, but she didn't problem solve that way, so we didn't. So if we didn't have money for food, we just didn't eat. I think probably we could have had alternate sources. That's one example. Another thing is my brother from her first marriage, my stepbrother, he's white. My mother and her kids and her first husband were white. My father is black. I'm biracial. And my brother became very racist against black people because they didn't like him in our neighborhood in Detroit. What was once an all-white neighborhood when white flight swept through. My mother was the only white family who stayed behind. And my brother went from living in an all-white neighborhood to suddenly being the only white kid in a black neighborhood. And he's always been very small. He got picked on and beat up. And he took out his anger and rage towards black people on me. I was frequently called a stupid little nigger in my home and frequently verbally abused by him. He was also ragey and almost like an alcoholic. And I've tried to figure out if he ever had struggles with alcohol, but I never did. But the way he presented himself to me and my sisters and my mother was as if he was an alcoholic. So he was a menacing presence. All that to say, if you add all of that up, not including the racism I was experiencing because my mother was sending me off to a private Christian white, primarily white school, I was experiencing a lot of racism there. All that to say, I didn't have a whole lot of safe spaces, and that produced a lot of trauma for me. That's a little bit of just my growing up. I mean, just an overview. But I went into life with a lot of issues, obviously with bisexuality. Probably that was the dominant issue because of my father's abuse. And I can honestly tell you it has taken me all of this time. So I am 41 years old. I'm about to be 42. It has taken me all of this time to really come to a complete understanding of my father's abuse and how it's affected me, how it's just altered me, how it's influenced and impacted me in a way that it's, first of all, up above the surface. It's on a conscious level as opposed to a very subterranean, deep and dark and mysterious level where I'm acting out. But now it's on a conscious level, and I understand it, and I understand what I need to be on guard against and how I can actually protect myself. But let me tell y'all, I started counseling at 19, and as I said, I'm about to be 42. So it's literally taken my whole life, my whole entire adult life, to figure out how to survive what my father did to me. So I don't say that lightly. It's a really heavy thing, and I understand completely why some people get lost in this and why they never recover, or why they are never able to stop making crazy decisions or bad decisions or choosing poorly in all manner of ways. And I think that's been my life literally up until now. And I'm just now, as I said, I'm not marketing myself as a guru of self-love and self-care and self-development. I'm hopefully not marketing, but sharing my story of how these things have helped me, because I'm literally just now getting to this point where I'm like, I am not ruled by this anymore, and I'm not making decisions by this anymore. So what I did when my mom went crazy, going back to my story, when I was in college, my mother really went nuts. And I believe that in order to escape her, I married the first man who was really awesome and great and wanted to marry me. and it did seem like a good choice at the time. I had also very recently decided to accept Jesus as my personal savior and live out a Christian faith. That happened when I was 18, I believe. So I had very recently done that, and this man was a Jesus following man, and I felt like this was the best thing for me to do, would be to marry him and move away from my mother and the toxicity, which was, but I probably didn't need to do that at marriage and probably not so young. I believe I was 20 when we started dating and 21 when we were engaged and 22 or so when we got married. I kind of can't remember now, but right around that time, I had just turned 22 or 23, I think. I guess I should have looked that up, but I was pretty young. All things considered, I was actually still in college. I hadn't even graduated yet. So we ended up having a very, very difficult marriage for so many reasons. Some of which is just that we weren't vibing and getting along, and I did not know how to communicate. I'll just put that out there. The whole part where I mentioned about 99% my fault, this is a big area. The demise of that marriage was about 95% my fault. So I struggled with communication. If you can't communicate, and if you can't communicate without being borderline abusive, your marriage is not going to last. And that was the case for me. I was also really struggling with temptations and flirtations with other men, again, as a result of what I didn't know at the time was a love addiction, which meant I felt like I had to have the affirmation of a man to say, either you are beautiful or you have worth, or because I'm attracted to you, you have worth, or because I want your body, you have worth. I was kind of in that sexual abuse. Child survivors of sexual abuse often take a myriad of different approaches for how they cope. You know, some women hate sex, some women love sex. And for me, it was really about an emotional connection, which I think was in part to how my father administered the abuse, but I won't go into all those details. But what it produced in me was a strong desire to get as many men as possible to be in some way fawning over me, my body, my looks, everything. It was very dysfunctional. And again, I've so recently found freedom from that it's such an amazing freedom. But I lived most of my life like this, including while I was married, which basically just makes me look like a cheating hoe, if we can just be real. So I was trying to get the flirtations of many different men. I ended up leaving that marriage in an affair, which was extremely shameful. Probably I have two of what I would say are the most tragic, sad mistakes of my life. That was one of them. In the last couple of months, actually the last 3 or 4 months of that marriage, I left with someone else, essentially. That was the beginning of the end for me and my life falling apart. And that was all within the last 5 or 6 years that happened. Subsequently, almost lost my children, in a custody battle. I didn't almost lose them, but my ex-husband did try to take them, and I had to fight to get them back and explain why I wasn't out of control, even though it really appeared to some that I was, and I understand why. Anyway, from there, I ended up going to a week-long treatment for sex addiction, and I am not a quote-unquote sex addict, but love addiction is a part of sex addiction. I really didn't have any understanding of any of that before I went. It was a life-saving week. Again, it changed a lot of things for me. But when I came back, I wasn't healed enough. It wasn't enough to save me from just jumping head first into another relationship. And that relationship is with the man I'm married to now. From what I understand and what we understand now, looking back, like we both were love addicts, both undiagnosed love addicts. Also, both of us had other issues going on that we didn't understand. And a lot of times when people get into really poor relationships, especially quickly, it's because all of that unhealthy stuff is underneath the surface brewing and attracting one another. And that was definitely happening for us. There's actually, especially for people who struggle with love addiction, if you say you fell in love at first sight, that should be a big red flag for you. because that's something in your mind, something really unfortunately unhealthy in your mind that's connecting to something very unhealthy and dysfunctional in their mind. and it's drawing you two together like a freaking moth to the flame. So we both felt like we fell in love at first sight. And let me tell you, we met on a Saturday on eHarmony. By Wednesday, we were talking and video chatting. I felt like I loved him already. So attracted to him. It was just, oh, he was just like everything. And then we met up a week later and we both felt like we fell in love at first sight. And it was just like explosions and fireworks. Actually, he said that in the Valentine's Day card he gave me the next year. Like, it was like explosions and fireworks. So what seemed like this like amazing love story of redemption turned into a great nightmare once he started becoming abusive after we got married. But we got married very quickly, within 8 months, which I do not recommend, especially if you're fresh off a divorce. So I'm so ashamed to admit, again, this is me just working through all of the mistakes I've made, but I'm so ashamed to admit that I only had, I think, maybe 5 or 6 months in between the official signing of the divorce papers and actually getting remarried. I was only single for literally 5 or 6 months after being married for almost 15 years to my first husband. So I'm just going to go ahead and say we all knew, a lot of people knew around me, that it was a bad decision. But when you're in love, it's very hard for anybody to tell you anything. But especially because I was not only in love, but I was also in grief. So I hate to use the word rebounding. I don't think I was rebounding, but I was certainly in grief and not making good decisions. And actually, he would acknowledge that too. It was a little different. He wasn't in the same kind of grief, but he had just gotten out of a relationship that he was in pain about as well. Not a long-term one. But all that to say, we made the decision. And a few years ago, to be exact, January 2017 was one of the worst months of my life, so almost 2 years ago. And I realized one day, I had been up all night, I couldn't sleep. This was when I was experiencing the most severe of the abuse, which, by the way, was verbal and not ever physical. But because it was verbal and because it was escalating, I was afraid and I was not sleeping. I also had a newborn at the time, a relatively new newborn, I should say. I had a 7th month old. And I came to one of those light bulb moments in life that month. It was either that month or the next month, but in combination with the terrors of those 2 months, I had this realization, like, Grace, look at your life. Like, look at what has happened. Look at what this has degraded down to. Like, you lost your husband, my first husband, your home, because I lost the house. I let him have it. Long story. You lost your retirement account, which I did because I had lost a job when I was getting divorced because I couldn't handle the emotional tumult. I lost my reputation from the affair, of course. I lost a lot of friends in our first divorce. Everyone who I knew and loved, I lost almost all those people because my ex-husband and I had worked together. So I lost a lot of support. And I was like, and now you're here in this marriage and you've lost your identity. You've lost your sense of self. You've lost your sense of worth. You've lost your ability to care for your children, which I meant emotionally. I just was not all there. I felt like at that point I had lost everything. I also didn't have any money and I didn't have a job because I had got laid off from a position. So we were broke and poor and I was miserable. Like, I cannot really underscore the type of misery I was feeling. And it wasn't just like a self-pity, which part of it was for sure. But it was also when you are in the midst of very, very severe abuse, your sense of reality is very jarred. And so I had this moment where I kind of listed it all out and I'm like, what the fuck is happening to me and how am I going to survive this? I mean, I actually literally sat down with pen and paper, like, I need to write out a plan. I need to figure out how am I going to survive this. And it wasn't like one day I just said, you know what, now it's time to be about self-love. But there were resources. I realized the first thing I had to do was I had to start reading again. I've always been a big reader and I've always actually that's not true. I've always been a moderate reader. But I really liked self-development books because I realized how much I enjoyed them when I was in ministry, because I was in ministry for 14 years with a group called InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, and I was serving with Black college students. That was my whole job, was to draw Black college students into these campus fellowships and study and read the Bible with them. And that was very, very difficult to do amidst the things I was struggling with, but I tried so hard because I loved my students so much. Well, anyway, one of the things that we did as a part of InterVarsity was we did a lot of study with self-development books, and I realized that that was something I really enjoyed, and I kind of got away from it after I left ministry and in the tumult of the divorce and the affair and the remarriage and the sex addiction camp. And I forgot to mention, I started going to Sex Addicts Anonymous meetings because I wanted to understand more and more what it meant to be in an addiction and to be free from an addiction. So all of that was really helpful, but I kind of stopped with the self-development because I thought that was only something you do, like if you're in ministry or if you're in business, say. But I was like, you know what? I need to pick that back up because I remembered that was one of the things that gave me life and reminded me there's more out there. So I started reading, and one of the things that I read was just something Danielle Laporte had written, and I got my hands on her journal, the Desire Map Journal, and that was really the beginning of some life changes for me because I started writing out in the Desire Map Journal. It asks you, what will you do today to feel the way you want to feel? And then that led me on a journey towards self-affirmations. And then I started reading a little bit more, and that led me on a journey towards what is mindfulness? And then mindfulness, I started on this journey of like, what does it look like to meditate? Also something I had already been doing as a Jesus follower. I've always had a real heavy prayer practice. I'm a prayer. I love praying. I pray all the time. I probably pray about an hour a day. I'm not exaggerating at all. And not all in one sitting, on and off throughout the day. As soon as I wake up, when I'm sitting thinking, almost every time I'm in the car, anytime I drive anywhere, it's just a habit I started about 20 years ago. And I've just always been a prayer. I love it. So it's been a form of meditation. I just hadn't called it that because it's a little different than the way kind of it's packaged in this new agey culture we live in. But that led to, you know, one thing led to the next. And then someone invited me to do a home-based business with a network marketing company. And I was like, you know what? I'm not doing anything else. I'm struggling to get a job. I was hugely pregnant at that time. And I just decided to start. That led me on a journey towards entrepreneurialism, which increased my self-esteem infinitesimally. Like it just increased it so high and just helped me to start to have hope that I could do something more with my life, that I could do something different. And from there, that led me to start looking at business books and start getting excited and start realizing like, oh yeah, I really have enjoyed all these years that I've done blogging. Maybe I should do that. Maybe I could write again. Maybe I could actually finish the books I've started. And so one thing led to the next. So this journey, even though some of these practices that I do now pretty regularly for the sake of self-care and self-development, I had started them long before all this happened, but it all just got pushed to the back burner in the torches that I lit on my life. And the last couple of years, I resurrected them as a way to say, I'm not going to survive. I will not survive. And I have three of the most beautiful, wonderful, amazing children that need me. And they don't just need me to just be here. They don't just need me to just be here and like plop some plates down on the table at 6 o'clock and then tell them to go to bed at 9. I realize they need way more from me than I can give when I'm in this fragile, broken down, frazzled, broke ass, dramatic, depressed ass state. Like I just knew I have to pull it together. I don't want to just be this kind of mom. And there's been times in my parenting I've felt like a great mom where I've been super engaged, and I realized, especially when I was going through the worst of the abuse, that it was just so much effort just to get up and engage with them and just provide for them and get them to school. Boy. So I knew I wanted more for my kids, and that's really kept me on this journey to continue to push to learn more, to grow more, to get at all of the areas of unhealth, to address every single area. Nothing is left uncovered. Actually, something I remember that I read many years ago, probably over 12 years ago, my ex-husband had this book by a very famous coach. I don't even know what his name is, actually. I don't even know what his name is. Woodley or Woodson or Wood something. Wood is in his last name, but he's some amazing coach apparently. And I remember just leafing through the book one day, and he was saying that the problem with a lot of leaders and a lot of people, the higher up they get or whatever, they might have, like, let's say there's 10 key areas of life or 10 key areas if you're an amazing CEO or whatever, just a very successful person. A lot of people will settle with seven or eight. They'll be like, you know what, I've got these seven or eight areas of life, and to their detriment, they ignore some of the other ones. And sometimes those are the most important ones, you know, like the workaholic who ignores their wife or their kids. So that's two areas, bam, they're failing at. And I remember reading that so long ago. And because I was starting at the bottom, I thought, what if I tried to build my life where I don't leave anything out, where I really try to be healthy in every single area, but especially the ones I've struggled in. That's marriage, hugely, since I'm in like two failing marriages, although I'm still in my second one, but it has been torrential, just torrential, and we're just coming up on 3 years. So when I say torrential in that amount of time, it's amazing that we're even still together. Parenting, which for me is something I have always wanted to be really good at, more than being wealthy, more than being successful, more than being well-respected, I've wanted to be a great and amazing mom. I want my kids to grow up and be like, my mom was freaking awesome, you know? So it felt like to me, like, there is no way I can live like this and exist like this and become the mother that I want to be, let alone all the other stuff I'd like to be, a successful writer, you know, and all of these huge professional aspirations, if I can't be a good mother. Like, that is first and foremost. So I just decided, what if I gave attention and notice to all of these things? Because I'm starting at the bottom, I'm doing literally nothing right. And I start choosing myself and choosing me so that I can be available for my kids, so that I can be available for other people. Because there's been times in my life where people have communicated to me, like, Grace, you're helping me so much on my journey, whether that's been through writing or my ministry. I've had quite a number of people, I would even say hundreds of people, thank me for my influence in their life. And that has been such a beautiful and amazing thing. But when I was going through 5 or 6 years of this torrent, it was very, very few and far between. And I had this feeling, you know, along the way, I'm losing grip of my purpose, like my purpose for living, my purpose for life. I'm losing hope that I'll ever be someone who impacts other people, not just my kids, but who impacts other people in big and deep ways. I've never had the desire to play it small. So for me to be playing small and to be so beat up by life and myself and my choices, it felt like something of a nightmare, like I've mentioned, in addition to everything that happened. So I won't say more now. I'll come back. This is already 33 minutes. Wow, that's really long. I'll try to make them shorter, but I'll come back and I'm going to try to do this. You know, I'll come back with a schedule and I will hit a little bit more about this journey and everything I did. And hopefully we can have lots of discussions about what it looks like to build yourself, to build a selfie. That's where I got that title from. In hindsight, low key, y'all, I would have made it build your selfie or build your selfie. But you know what? Hindsight is 2020 and it's build a selfie and I done branded all of it. So that's what it is. Go check out the blog. If you'd like to get on the newsletter, send me an email at grace@buildaselfie.com and I'll hook you up. Thank you so much for listening if you got this far, and I hope y'all have a wonderful and blessed day.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.